the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Will O'Callaghan in for Matt on this Friday. We've got plenty to talk about on the week trending. We've got the White House. We've got Rosie O'Donnell making the trip from the USA over to here. Grow air on Traw. We've got a crackdown around Paddy's Day. Tax evasion and OnlyFans. And that's just a taste of what we're going to get into here. Delighted to say that I am joined in studio by Sinead O'Carroll. Sinead, how are you getting on?
How are you? Happy Friday, bank holiday Friday.
You look as happy a Friday as it gets. And Joe O'Shea joining us from our Cork studio. Joe, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Look, we're well set. We've plenty to talk about here. And I didn't want to get entirely bogged down, Sinead, on the reaction to what's happened with Micheál Martin's week in Washington. But taking a look at some of the US reaction gave us a different perspective here. Because I think a lot of people in Ireland thought, you know what, he's probably just hit the middle ground here where he's not offended anybody or ended up in a row, but at the same time he hasn't pushed J.D. Vance or Donald Trump on any topics and, you know, he's negotiated his way through the week. But in the USA they felt that he kind of sat back and seemed a bit meek.
Yeah, and I think that's fair enough. We had started to analyse our own analysis within 24 hours of the event. It's not really a ceiling, a new floor had been set with what happened in the Oval Office with Zelensky, and I think people around Micheál Martin and people in Ireland were a little bit fearful that something Micheál Martin could be seen as a spokesperson for the EU and something frightful could happen in the Oval Office. But if you change the perspective a little bit, you think, okay, well, if Micheál Martin is going over as a spokesperson for the EU, and that is how he played it in the following day, 200% tariffs on alcohol and wine and champagne are mooted by Trump, then it takes on a different veneer. And nothing is normal about the Trump administration. So we also can't analyse diplomatic performances as if they're normal. So this is why we are kind of flip-flopping between, okay, how did the US see it? How did we see it? And what's the reality? There is actually no reality because we don't know what Trump's reality is yet. So
it's a little bit surreal as well. I was wondering what was going to happen with J.D. Vance because he has had social media postings about Ireland previously and he's talked about, you know, Ireland's rules and legislation potentially coming in, and he's got very involved in that mire. And yet then you find this guy who wants to come and play golf in Clare and he's wearing shamrock socks.
Well, he's electioneering. Yeah. He's looking ahead 4 years and he's thinking, well, like, am I the guy in 4 years? And if I'm the guy in 4 years, I definitely need conservative, Christian, Republican, Irish Americans. So they had lessened in importance over the years, but during this administration, they're going to regain importance. Those men who maybe weren't as important over the last 12 years have regained power, have regained status, have regained importance. So J.D. Vance was electioneering at that breakfast. He's making sure that he is, some of it is the paddywhackery and the, you know, playing to kind of the enjoyable fun. This is a nice day for us. It's a day away from politics. And some of it was, you know, Brett Kavanaugh is here, RFK is here. Like, I am playing to a quite important voting base. So he was quite giddy. He was very happy. You know, he's like, some of it is very simple as well, Will. He's able to speak English to another English speaking leader. Like, some of it comes down to really basic stuff like that. So when the US media are analysing it, like, they're looking at Micheál Martin saying, yeah, he's quite meek. They're comparing him to someone like Macron, who did, you know, has a longer relationship with Trump, but, you know, did correct him on a couple of things. They looked at Micheál Martin and said, yeah, you know, you did that one Boeing intervention around Ryanair and AerCap, but didn't kind of correct him on anything, kind of, you know, very much retreated in his seat when he needed to. Is it diplomacy at play? Yes, in one version. Is it good spokesmanship for the EU? Would it have mattered? Like, that, there were the questions. We're living in Trump's land and they're very difficult questions to answer.
Yeah. What was your take on the week and the performance that was, Joe?
It was very difficult to watch. It was very cringy. Nobody was enjoying themselves except Trump, because Trump had a load of cameras pointed at him. It was meaningless in a way. It just showed the most animated that Trump got to the whole thing was when one of his pet propagandist reporters teed him up with a Rosie O'Donnell question, you know, asked the RT show, you know, why in the world would you want to have Rosie O'Donnell living in Ireland? Now, Micheál Martin obviously didn't really know who Rosie O'Donnell was and why, you know, why should he care? But of course, then that teed Trump up to go off on one of his, you know, his usual kind of rants and raves. And she's an old kind of like, you know, subject that he likes to get stuck into in a very misogynistic, horrible way. And it just showed how pointless it all was. Yeah, Micheál Martin could have stood up and probably should have. I think one thing that Micheál Martin, that might come back to haunt him, Trump joking or dismissing our housing crisis, you know, with, of course they got a housing crisis, they've been very successful, blah blah blah, and Micheál Martin having to do his kind of nervous laugh and kind of you know, about that. I don't think that's, from a domestic point of view, from an Irish point of view, I don't think that was his finest moment at all. But the main thing was, he got in there, nothing bad happened, he got out, it doesn't really matter, nobody really cares, and at least, you know, we didn't have a huge blazing row.
Those questions from that reporter show the level of discourse and the kind of media that Trump wants from the White House. And, you know, we can look at that and people can say it's not that important. In 4 years' time, that kind of thing might seem very important. That guy was the same guy who asked Zelensky why he wasn't wearing a suit, and he praised Micheál Martin for his attire.
And like, if that's, I'm right in saying that he's in a relationship with a commentator who would be incredibly right-wing in the States as well?
Yeah, so and Trump kind of looks and goes, that's a great question, you're going to feel good about that question, and gives Micheál Martin a slap on the knee. And yeah, it's kind of inconsequential stuff at the time, but, you know, when we're kind of looking back and analysing the last 4 years and we think, okay, this is the level of discourse that the president wants, and this is who he's surrounding, who he's putting into the press corps, and we know that he's, you know, not letting some people in, that stuff is going to really matter, and it's going to, you know, change how people see the administration and what they hear and view from leaders coming in from outside of America. I think the main thing was that there was so little consequence to the meeting that, you know, even the one interjection that Martin did have around the two-way street on tariffs completely went over Trump's head. Like, he had stopped, he had stopped listening. You know, it wasn't the Trump show anymore. Like, the entire, it was 50 minutes, which is unheard of, like unprecedented to have that amount of questions. But it's just his chance. He wants to reporters to ask him questions so he can rail against Biden, so he can use his favorite strategy, which is blame the Democrats. Anything bad's happening, it's the Democrats. He goes from one subject to the next to say something about how the country was ruined when he wasn't president. It had absolutely nothing got to do with the engagement in front of him.
Joe, before we go to the break, we'll move on to other stories aside from Washington after the break, but I wonder if Donald Trump's reaction when he was asked about Sinn Féin deciding not to go, when he kind of went, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Does that mean that actually Micheál Martin took the right course of action here? That if he had decided to not go, it probably wouldn't have made a huge difference to the Trump administration?
It doesn't make a difference, because like, you have an administration or a regime or whoever you want to, the MAGA crowd, they're ignoring their own judges at the moment. You know, they're not paying, they're not, there's judges making rulings against the firing, mass firings of civil servants, and you have White House spokespeople coming out and saying, it doesn't matter. The judges are, what they say doesn't matter. It's the president, it's the king, if that matters. So, again, you know, Micheál Martin kind of had to do it, and we all had to suffer through it. It doesn't mean anything in the long run. They will do what they will do. It'll all come down, at the end of the day, it comes down to power and how hard the EU and Canada can push back against these crazy tariffs. Micheál Martin giving a bowl of shamrock to Trump, it doesn't matter. He could have given a bowl of Smarties. It would be, had the exact same effect.
We do have to go, though. Well, there's no question of not going. Whatever soft power we do hold, or whatever cards that may possibly ever be in Ireland's hands, the minute we give up that engagement, it's gone. I think there's some power in questioning whether we should go in instance when we have a friend in the White House. Like last year, there might have been more valid questioning. I think still have to go, but it's more valid questioning of whether we can make a bigger point around things like our view of Gaza. But doing that when you don't have a friend in the office, it would be handing over every bit of power you have.
There's one thing that's important as well. They didn't just talk to Trump, so there would have been a lot of discussions around, on Capitol Hill. They would have met a lot of allies, a lot of, you know, GOP figures. You know, Trump's not going to be there forever. The midterms are coming down the track very quickly, so it's important to go and kind of maintain those relationships and our real friends in America for when the winds shift again.
Joe, can we go to New Trafford or New Old Trafford? Or I'm not quite sure how they're going to brand this because they want to put a company onto it. It's such a weird reaction to all this because I think most people saw it and went, oh yeah, it kind of does look like the fork of the devil, but at the same time it also looks like a circus tent, which at a time when they're sitting in the bottom half of the Premier League is a choice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is kind of a choice. So this is the news, of course, that Manchester United PLC are going to build a world-class shopping, tourism and destination centre in Manchester. They might have some football attached to it as well, you never know. And they're talking about a 100,000-seater stadium, so it's 25,000 more than they can fit in at the moment. This is all very, very big plans, and if it happens for the city of Manchester, it's probably going to be great. But it comes with a lot of caveats, not the least that Manchester United are not doing very well, as everybody knows, although they've had a slight uptick recently. And so Jim Ratcliffe, the guy who's kind of pushing all of this, is turning out to be a kind of a strange kind of owner for Manchester United. In a way, he's turning out to be a kind of an Asda Elon Musk. You know, I mean, he's a billionaire who has a car, who makes cars, except that 7,000 of those cars were recalled this week, the Grenadier car, because the doors keep opening when they're going along the road. So a bit in common with Elon Musk there as well. So he's talking really big, that this is going to transform Manchester United, transform the city of Manchester, and that, you know, it's going to turn the city into a global destination. It remains to be seen. Very ambitious plans, but it remains to be seen if they can get the money together and if they can get it actually done.
That's the case, Ned. Who's going to foot the bill on this? So you had Jim Ratcliffe playing the poor mouth the day before, did a series of interviews, sat down with Dan Rowan from the BBC, sat down with Gary Neville for The Overlap, and was saying, if it wasn't for my investment and laying off 400 people, Manchester United could run out of cash by November of this year. And then the next day he turns around and goes, well, you know, as part of the UK government's plan to overhaul things, here's this stadium that could cost up to £2 billion.
Yeah, £2 billion. And they're saying, like, oh, the funding's not the biggest question. The biggest question is whether, like, we'll get the government on board. And we don't want government funding for it, but they have to do the regeneration plan of the area, because this is, you know, this isn't just a stadium, because no, things aren't just what they're called anymore. It's, as Joe said, it's a destination centre, you know? So it's like, how much, like, commercialisation can we cram into a stadium to bring even more people to, like, pay for tickets that are probably going to be more expensive? That's what the fans in the area are most afraid of. If this is built in 5 years, so Sir Jim Ratcliffe is saying this is going to be built in 5 years, not 10 years. Most 100,000 capacity stadiums should take 10 years to build. This is going to be done in 5 years. Like, if he does that, we should put him in charge of the housing crisis and Casement Park and every other white elephant that has ever existed. So the idea is that they'd get the green light for this, they'd get low-cost funding in the same way that Spurs did for their stadium, and they do a modular build and use the Manchester Shipping Canal to get the prefabricated stadium and into the area, which will be regenerated by the government. If they get all of those parts moving and done in 5 years, that is a phenomenal achievement. But I think we're going to be looking back at these AI-generated pictures that look like something from what my toddler watches on YouTube, and think that was a nice plan before Manchester United came.
And in between the two different plans they put up, John O'Shea was wronged in all this as well. There was an AI that had John O'Shea and Roy Keane jerseys in the first one, and someone put Cobby Mainoo on instead of John O'Shea. So John O'Shea has got a rough deal in between the two drafts that we saw, so I'm not sure if we're going to see that actually happen. The crackdown around St. Patrick's Day, Joe, as well. I mean, this is a constant thing about booze within the city, in Dublin particularly. There's going to be 1,000 Gardaí that are going to be on the streets. They say the water cannons were ready to be deployed if needed, but also they're going to cut down on the amount of off-licence time that's available here.
It's funny that the reporting about Dublin's St. Patrick's Day Parade is now, it's kind of veering towards reporting on war zones and conflict zones. You know, it's like, you know, water cannons, aerial support, thousands of Gardaí, the army on standby. Geez, everybody calm down, for God's sake. This was 500,000 people going to converge in Dublin for the weekend, and hopefully they're all going to have a great time, and hopefully it goes off very well. But I'd say about 6,000 of them will be reporters hanging around Temple Bar waiting for it all to kick off. Everybody these days, it's like we can't have a big party anymore without, oh my God, there's going to be far-right protests that are going to be buses burnt out and all this kind of stuff. It is a bit, I think, the reporting's over the top, and there's a danger as well that you kind of create this atmosphere around it of like people going, oh my God, the tension, you know? So hopefully it all goes off very well. You won't be allowed to buy booze from an off-licence until around 4 o'clock, until the parade is over, which is probably good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having to wait for the kids to get their parade over until you start hitting the off-licence and the pub. So, like I said, hopefully it all goes off very well. If anybody's interested, Cork's very relaxed on St. Patrick's weekend. You should come down here. And
No water cannons.
It's so unusual to hear a Cork man like telling people to get to Cork.
I'm not going to lie. I've avoided the city centre around Dublin around St. Patrick's Day. It's just not for me.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
I'm heading to Cork, Joe, so you have one person sold on the plan.
Fantastic. We can't afford a tourism board, so it's up to me. that's what I'm doing on Today FM.
I didn't expect we'd be talking about OnlyFans, and I especially didn't think we'd be talking about the Irish Viking, who is Matthew Gilbert. The reason he's in the news at the moment, Sinead, is because he was on the tax defaulters list from revenue. He underdeclared by €61,374. But eye-watering enough what this guy's been making. He's claiming €50,000 a month he's been making.
Yeah, so he had previously claimed himself that he was doing that. So obviously that's one way to get the attention of the tax man, is to tell people what you're earning so that they can look at what tax you're paying. So that was his own personal thing, was to the tune of 61,000. But his company also, Matty Irish Viking Limited, which has an address in Dublin, they were found to have underdeclared some tax across corporation tax, PAYE, PRSI, USC and VAT. So that was actually the bigger, with penalties and interest included, there was a total owed to revenue of about 266,000. So it gives you a kind of clue of how lucrative the OnlyFans business can be. So for people who don't know, OnlyFans is content creation that people do, and people pay for content to be created for them. So if people look up this model, he calls himself the Irish Viking. So any pictures that I've seen is generally topless with kind of like rugged boots on, or, you know, kind of American style jeans, like a model from the 1990s. So, and people pay to follow and subscribe and get content.
50 grand a month, Joe. Would you be tempted to become the Cork Viking, no?
Why not? Yeah, I mean, I'd definitely have to look for that kind of money. It's always hilarious when people kind of like loudly advertise that they've got these huge, you know, revenue streams that may not be entirely kosher or coming from abroad or whatever, as if the revenue guys don't actually look at social media or read newspapers or keep up on these things. So it's just, there's a lot of people making money out of OnlyFans, and it's not what you might expect. It's not very, standard pornography, to be honest with you. There's people making money doing all sorts of things. So, fair juice to this guy for finding revenue stream, but maybe he should have talked to his accountant before he went on social media and talked about how much he was earning.
Yeah, there was one of the smaller stars from the Harry Potter franchise. She's, I think, very funny, like kind of very charismatic on social, and people really like her hair. She has amazing hair, so she just does hair content, like, you know, the hair on her head.
Because there's always that assumption, Sinead, that it's going to be adult content if it is OnlyFans.
But it's not all adult content,
It's also... it is adult content in a way.
People
who like feet, for instance.
Yeah.
You know.
And there is just a lot of the basic adult content as well.
They're really into feet and they're not podiatrists, So,
This is an easier one for revenue. It's very transactional. It's money. It's not like the other social media influencers where people get gifts or they do kind of PR stuff or they get trips to hotels or they use cars, which is kind of more complicated for the people who earn that kind of living, but also for revenue to figure out, and they're the ones who get a lot of letters recently. But this one is kind of very transactional. There's a money stream.
There you go. Feed photos. What a way to set you up for the bank holiday weekend. Many thanks to Joe O'Shea and to Sinead O'Carroll.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.